Hull's musical heritage. David Whitfield. David Whitfield was born in the Drypool area of Hull in 1926, a year that saw John Logie Baird demonstrate his television. It was also the year in which John Coltrane and Dame Joan Sutherland were born. 1926 was a great year for the musical industry. His family lived on Albert's Terrace, which was located just off Clarence Street. Sadly, the house and street no longer exist. During his formative years, the Whitfields also lived on Harcourt Street and Beaumont Street. David attended St. Peter's School on Church Street, and it was there that he gained links to St. Peter's Church, where his love of singing started. After leaving school, he joined the Royal Navy, aged 17, and served in the Far East and also on HMS Ramillies during the Second World War. As a seaman gunner on the Ramillies, David was part of the D-Day landings protecting the area known as Sword Beach. At the end of 1945, David relocated to the Far East and was part of the entertainment division that performed for the soldiers based overseas. And he left the Royal Navy in 1949, a process known as being demobbed. During this time, David entered a talent show in Southampton, but he was disqualified because the rules stated the performer had to complete their act in its entirety. David was unable to complete his because the audience applauded so loudly, and therefore the judges were unable to hear the last part of his song. A major turning point in David's career was being persuaded to enter a heat of the popular talent show Opportunity Knocks. The show was hosted by Huey Green and broadcast on Radio Luxembourg, a commercial station in the days of BBC Radio having complete control of broadcasting. David was offered the opportunity to tour with Opportunity Knocks, and he broadcast regularly on Radio Luxembourg, but at the end of his 8-month contract, David unfortunately found himself without work. David returned north to Hull and worked as a coalman's assistant before moving into the world of concrete preparation, where he spent his working life loading cement onto lorries to be dispatched out to the new housing and infrastructure contracts that were so prevalent in post-war Britain. During that time, singing was still a huge part of David's life, and he continued to perform in working men's clubs around Hull and the East Riding, earning around 30 shillings, or £2 per performance, a figure that would equate to around £80 in 2015's money. His contact with Huey Green led to a one-off performance at the Criterion Hotel in London in December of 1951. After this show, David was offered a regular singing role by Cecil Landau, a local impresario, at the Washington Hotel in London's West End, where he was earning in the region of £10 per week. During his time at the Washington, one of the executives at the Decca Recording Company was in the audience and approached David to offer him a test recording. After this recording had taken place, Decca offered David a full recording contract. The start of 1953 saw David in the Decca Studios recording his first Plater Mater, together with Nat Temple and his orchestra. In its first month after release, single sales had reached 20,000, which was considered to be very good, considering it was the first record from a relatively unknown artist. The second release, I believe, sold better than the first, and despite strong competition from Frankie Lane, it sold 75,000 copies. With I Believe, David entered and won the International Song Festival, a forerunner to the present-day competition, the Eurovision Song Contest, and this took place in Noc-les-Hautes in Belgium. Throughout 1953, David continued to tour around the UK, and in many of his venues was given top billing through his links to Decca and the quality of his voice. The next track, Answer Me, beats Frankie Lane to the top spot in the charts, and went on to sell 700,000 copies. This was despite the BBC initially banning it from the playlist due to the religious context of some of the lyrics. 1954 saw David increase his profile in the UK, with further appearances in variety theatre. This saw him fly to Belfast to appear in the Songwriters Guild concert, performing with the orchestra and company of London's Victoria Palace Theatre. The year would also see David record his most successful track, and the track that would become his signature tune, Caramia. It was first performed on the 26th of June 1954 in Blackpool, and at each of the performances, it was received with acclaim and a standing ovation. It was put on general sale by Decca on the 1st of July. Caramia reached number one by the middle of July, and sold 300,000 copies by the end of the month. It stayed at number one for 10 consecutive weeks, the first track ever to achieve this, and a feat that has only been equalled or bettered on five other occasions since the UK singles chart started in 1952. The track eventually went on to sell 2.5 million copies, and for that achievement received a gold disc. Gold discs in the 1950s had to sell a million copies, rather than the 400,000 that artists have to sell to receive one today. David continued to tour the UK, and was invited to perform for the Queen at the Royal Variety Performance on three separate occasions. Other performers on the bill included Noel Coward, Bob Hope, Howard Keel and Frankie Lane. After the success of Karamiri in the UK, success continued across the Atlantic, and David was invited to perform on Ed Sullivan's Toast of the Town show. America was, and continues to be, a difficult market to break. David's first performance on the show was just two songs, but that was enough to jam the switchboard of CBS, the show's maker, with people wanting to know more information about this talented singer. He performed on the show a further six times, and on the seventh and final appearance, the US audience rating for the programme was over 65 million people. After his appearances in America, David was invited for a film test by Joe Pasternak, one of Hollywood's most celebrated producers. David passed this audition and was offered a contract, meaning that the boy from Hull would be moving over the Atlantic. David decided not to take up this offer, and there are various reasons that have been mooted for this, from homesickness to causing problems back on the variety circuit in the UK. Whatever the reason, Hollywood called, but it couldn't tempt David to move away. Towards the end of 1954, the razzle-dazzle of America was replaced by the calming influences of Switzerland. David was suffering with throat problems, and a period of convalescence followed. After David returned to England, he returned to more chart success, with four more releases, all of which reaching the top 20. Beyond the Stars, Mama and When You Lose the One You Love all sold well, but the track Everywhere was the most successful of the quartet, reaching number 3. Throughout the 1950s, David continued to have hits that reached the top 10, but with rock and roll now having more of an influence over music, the ballad style was harder to sell in the large numbers that were required to make an impact on the chart. The last release to make the top 10 was the Adoration Waltz, which reached number 9 in March 1957. After this, the only major success was the theme song to the film Sea Wife, which starred Richard Burton and Joan Collins, which gave great exposure in cinemas, but only reached number 27 in the chart. As sales declined, David returned to touring the country, performing in stage performances and roles in pantomimes. The first pantomime role came at the end of 1957 as Robinson Crusoe, opposite Arthur Askey and Tommy Cooper. Other pantomimes included Humpty Dumpty and Sleeping Beauty at venues across the north of England, Sheffield and Leeds being two of the cities visited. After his final chart success, a re-release of I Believe in 1960, David toured with various stage shows, the first of which being Rosemary, which started in London's Victoria Palace before touring around the country, taking in venues such as the Bristol Hippodrome and Sheffield's Lyceum. Whilst touring the UK, David also toured around the world, adding to the global following that he had. Between 1954 and 1980, his travels took him to places such as the Far East, New Zealand and Australia. David also returned to North America, where his worldwide career had started, and there was also a forces tour taking in Malta, Libya and Cyprus. It was on one of these tours that David became unwell. On the 15th of January 1980, during his 13th tour of Australia, he suffered a cerebral hemorrhage. David was transferred to the Royal North Shore Hospital in Sydney, where on admission he fell into a coma, and was pronounced dead just over 2 hours after he was admitted into hospital. He was cremated at the Northern Suburbs Crematorium in Sydney, and his ashes were then returned back to Hull. David's ashes were carried out on the frigate HMS Sirius out into the North Sea and scattered at a point 5 miles southwest of Spurn Point. Looking back over David's career, there were high and low points, but his legacy is that of a major recording artist who entertained and wowed audiences all across the globe. The release of Karamia and its run of 10 consecutive weeks at number 1 is something that any artist will be proud of. This feat has not been equaled or beaten since Rihanna achieved it in 2007 with the track Umbrella. His untimely death in January 1980 robbed the music industry of one of its earliest stars, but his music lives on in recordings, early video footage and photos from around the world. He is remembered in his home city of Hull by a statue that sits proudly in Kingston Square, opposite Hull New Theatre. The statue features David in a pose in front of a microphone, an image that sums up a man who performed and shared his music with millions across the world. The statue was unveiled in August 2012 before a show celebrating his life. Hull certainly has a rich heritage of culture, producing acts that have had chart success. But it all started with David Whitfield, a working-class man born in the Drypool area of the city, who entertained his audiences with his rich dulcet tones right up to his sad passing 35 years ago.